are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Friday, everybody. The Timberwolves are gearing up to take on the 19-7 LA Clippers on Friday night at Target Center. And the Wolves, of course, are in a six-game losing streak. So a lot to talk about ahead of this one. And as trade rumors are starting to swirl around the league, there will be a lot to talk about in the coming days as well. Today, though, we're going to mostly spend our time breaking down the matchup on Friday night and what you can expect to see on Friday at Target Center between the Wolves and Clippers. First, we'll run through some opening notes regarding injuries, what to expect, from some of the more operational items for Friday night. First and foremost, this was originally a 7 o'clock game that was pushed to 8:30 for ESPN. Of course, it was pushed to 8:30 probably right before this losing streak started, maybe right towards the beginning of the Wolves losing streak. So sorry, ESPN, sorry, ESPN audience, but the Wolves are struggling of late. The Clippers, on the other hand, are playing really well. We'll get more into that in a moment. The Wolves will be wearing their new City Edition jerseys for the first time this year. Those are the light blue jerseys with MSP across the chest. They look really sharp. They're really plain, simple. They maybe could have done a little bit more with those jerseys, but until we see them on the court, I can't give a full analysis really of them, but I think they should look really nice on the floor. And so that'll be another thing to look forward to tonight. Regardless of outcome, we'll get to see those jerseys in action. Typically, the first night of the City Edition jerseys has had some energy in the building at Target Center. Obviously, the Prince night, everything Prince related last year was pretty crazy. This, you would think, late start, ESPN game, maybe that happens again Friday night. But man, attendance hasn't been great lately, and understandably so. There hasn't been much energy in Target Center. It's a little bit of a catch-22 with the team playing bad. The fans aren't showing up as much, and they aren't giving as much energy when they're there, and the players aren't feeding off of, or the players don't have any energy to feed off of, and the Wolves' home record is not good. So that's certainly something to keep an eye on tonight, to see whether or not the crowd can even get up for the new jerseys and get excited for that. But it should be a nice atmosphere at Target Center, at least compared to the last few games that the Wolves have hosted. I already mentioned that the Wolves have lost six straight games. The Clippers have won 12 of 14 themselves. They are in game 5 of a 6-game road trip. So the Wolves can cross their fingers and hope that perhaps the Clippers are becoming a little bit road weary. They've already been to Milwaukee, Washington, Indiana, and Toronto on this trip. They had the Kawhi return to Toronto on Wednesday. So it was a fairly easy win for them, but I'm sure that was emotional. And they actually turn around and play Chicago on Saturday night. And with the late start in Minnesota, the Clippers will be tipping off against the Bulls really only like, 19 hours after they finish the game in Minnesota. So perhaps this is a game where if the Wolves can hang around, maybe push a little bit of a lead early in the fourth quarter, maybe the Clippers, are more willing to pack it in with another game in less than 24 hours in another city. So there's that. The Wolves can at least hope for that. That's something that could help the Wolves out. The Clippers mentioned they've won 14 of 16. Not so coincidentally, 12 of 14. Not so coincidentally, Paul George has been back for 15 games. His first game back, they lost at New Orleans, believe it or not. I think 6-win New Orleans Pelicans. They lost by 5 back on November 14th, which is also about the same time the Wolves skid started, was right after that. They've been like 3-10 since that point. They lost the first game with George, and then they proceeded to reel off 7 straight wins and overall 12 of their last 14. So with Paul George, this team is 12-3. And of course was decent before they got Paul George back. So really, really close to unstoppable team with both Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, who either one of them has been leading the team in scoring outside of a couple Montrezl Harrell games over the past 10 games. It's been a lot of Leonard and a little bit of George. This team just has a ton of scoring punch and is decent on defense too. We'll get more into that here in a moment. In terms of injuries, the Wolves still will not have Jake Layman. He's been ruled out with his sprained toe. I mean, there's probably some hope that he could play the middle of next week. The Wolves have the next 4 days off. They don't play again until Wednesday. So maybe there's a chance. I mean, I have no idea, but hopefully, even if he was close, they probably wouldn't push it on a Friday. Difficult game against the Clippers when they could wait and get him back, hopefully next Wednesday, to play the Pelicans after this long layoff. Jeff Teague and Kade Bates-Diop are both listed as questionable. Teague's been on the injury report the last few days with the ankle that he tweaked in Oklahoma City a week ago, but he's played in all the games since then. So don't know how big of a concern that is for this game, but that would be a big issue, as Teague's been three of the last four games minus the game in LA has been really good. Bates-Diop missed Wednesday's game with flu-like symptoms, and according to Basketball Reference, he's listed as questionable. Wolves PR has not yet put out an injury report at the time of this recording, so that'll be something to keep an eye on at shoot-around to see if Bates-Diop is there and is participating, and hopefully his illness got better and not worse over the past couple of days, because he had been playing really well and is a big part of that bench unit. The Clippers won't have Patrick Beverley, which is significant. He has a concussion, and I believe he's played in all the other games for the Clippers this year, so that would be a big miss for them. Also, Jamichael Green is listed as questionable. He's missed four of the last five games and was a big part of that rotation before he was hurt, so that would be the other name to keep an eye on when the injury report comes out. If he's not available, that obviously slims out their front court a little bit. They're still a very deep team, but not having Jamichael Green would be significant, alongside with not having Beverley. All right, next up, we're going to get a little bit more into the strategy of the game and what the Wolves will need to try and do to slow down the Clippers' offensive attack, and what the Wolves might be able to try and do offensively against LA. And then we'll take a quick peek ahead and see what's on the horizon for the Wolves as well. It's easy to look at the Clippers and just assume that they're all Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, and that obviously isn't true. They're an extremely deep team, and one of the things the Wolves are going to struggle with in this game is that the Clippers simply have a deeper bench and have more weapons than the Wolves do. For as good as Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins are and have been this year, and as good as Jeff Teague has been lately, the Wolves just don't have the depth to realistically compete with the Clippers. Obviously, anything can happen in one game, but this Clippers team, not having Patrick Beverley in this game is huge. He's a big part of their defense, and the Clippers defense is I would say even better than their offense is, at least at this stage in the season. If you look at this road trip the Clippers are on, or I guess even just look at like their past six games, they've held four of their last six opponents under 100 points. They're really good defensively, and Beverly's a really big part of that. I would say he's equally as important as Kawhi Leonard on defense for this team. Those are the two best defensive players on their team. Paul George is good. Montrezl Harrell comes off the bench, strangely enough, but plays about twice as many minutes as Zubats does, who starts. And that group of four, Leonard, Beverly, George, and Harrell, are so good defensively together that it keeps the Clippers in every single game, even if their offense isn't clicking on all cylinders. And they're still figuring out some things with both Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on the floor at the same time, but they're also still winning. So, but their defense is fantastic. And the Wolves at times have struggled to score this year. If Towns gets into foul trouble, or if Wiggins is having one of his off nights, this team doesn't have a ton of other scoring punch. They've got a bunch of average to below average 3-point shooters. And Jeff Teague isn't exactly consistent offensively either. There isn't anybody outside of Towns, Wiggins, and sometimes Jeff Teague that can create their own shot. Jarrett Culver can get to the rim, but he hasn't shot the ball well enough from the perimeter or even at the rim, really, to be considered a consistent offensive player at this early stage of his career. He could certainly grow into that, but there's nobody else that can get to the paint consistently and score, that can knock down threes without, threes off the dribble. Josh Okogie's becoming a decent catch and shoot, 3-point shooter. Robert Covington's a very good 3-point shooter in transition and as a spot-up shooter, but neither of those guys are going to create off the dribble, and the Wolves just have a very limited number of guys that can do that. And for as much as they've talked about, and before the season talked about, running an offense with more cutting and spacing and everything, not having Jake Layman has really hurt that. Kade Bates-Diop has done a good job since he's been in the rotation of cutting and of hitting open shots, but the Wolves' assist rate is not good either. They're one of the bottom few teams in the NBA in terms of assist rate. And that's an issue against a team like the Clippers. The other thing that the Clippers do extremely well, and again, besides the obvious, because they've got some of the most dynamic offensive players in the league, but the Clippers are the number one offensive rebounding team in the league by offensive rebounding rate. Montrezl Harrell is like 20th in the league in offensive rebounding percentage, despite being undersized and coming off the bench. He's a huge part of what they do. Ivica Zubac is actually third in the league in offensive rebounding percentage. He grabs more than 15% of available offensive rebounds, tied with Jarrett Allen, behind only Andre Drummond. And that actually surprised me a little bit. I didn't realize he was that good of an offensive rebounder. And so between those two, and they split the minutes at center, they don't play together. Zubac starts the game and Harrell comes off the bench and plays the majority of the game. But both of those guys are prolific offensive rebounders. And the Wolves, for their part, have been struggling on when it comes to defensive rebounding. We've talked about this frequently here at Locked On Wolves, that the Timberwolves' defensive rebounding is a key part of what they do when they go small and they play with Robert Covington at the four. And it started kind of middle of the pack, and then it hovered in the 17-18 range in terms of league-wide rank. But now we're back down to 22 in the league, the Timberwolves are, with defensive rebounding percentage. And that's not going to play. If the Wolves can't hit three-pointers at a league average rate, and they can't, and they haven't, then they need to rebound the ball better than that to limit the other team's possessions. And that is exactly the sort of thing that is really going to rear its ugly head against the best offensive rebounding team in the league. The Wolves simply can't afford to give up second chance points, and yet they do it quite a bit and have been doing it a lot lately, and the Clippers are going to get their second chance points. So that's a huge thing to keep an eye out for in this game, is especially Zubac and Harrell on the glass, but that whole team, and Beverly's a really good rebounding point guard too. So it's significant, again, that he's not playing. But defensive rebounding is the number one key to this game. Georgian and Leonard and even Harrell, to some extent, are going to get theirs. They're all going to score. But to limit those second chance points is huge. Also, everybody on the Clippers is basically a three-point shooter outside of Harrell. Everybody on that team attempts threes. Basically, everybody is league average or above. And the Timberwolves need to be cognizant of that. They need to make sure that they actually did a decent job. I said this on Thursday's episode. The Wolves did a decent job contesting three-pointers from the Jazz on Wednesday. Utah just made a lot of contested shots. In this game, the Wolves will need to do the same and just kind of trust that at some point that's going to swing back. Rodney Magruder is likely, he started a couple games. When Beverly didn't play earlier in the year, he is below league average. He's actually listed on the injury report too, I think as probable. So he'll likely play. He's about the only player that is in the rotation regularly besides the two centers who don't shoot threes, Harrell and Zubac, that's below league average for 3-point shooting. Everybody else is like 34% and above. Haven't even mentioned Lou Williams yet. What seems like perennial sixth man of the year, comes off the bench and plays 31 minutes for this team, and he's shooting 35% from beyond the arc as well. This team can score from really anywhere on the floor, and is unique in that those big men don't shoot threes. All they do is dominate the offensive glass. Everybody else can stay on the perimeter and do their thing, and essentially have a 4-out-1-in offensive setup. Jamichael Green not being available, if he is indeed, again, he's missed 4 of his last 5 games, that's also significant. He's a 38% 3-point shooter. He rebounds the ball extremely well himself. And being down Green matters a lot too. But again, this team's depth is crazy. They've also got Patrick Patterson. They've got Mo Harkless. They've got guys who have started a number of games, both for this team and previous teams, that can step in the front court at the 4 and really do a great job of supporting them, both from beyond the arc and on the glass. It's just an amazing collection of above average players that the Clippers have. And then you add 2 superstars in Leonard and George, and a guy in Harrell who's a borderline star at this point. And this is a really good team. They're definitely, in my opinion, they're going to give the Lakers a run for their money by the end of the year. They're at this point, I think 3 or 4 games behind them in the West. But this is an equally as good team, in my opinion. So look out for the Clippers moving forward. And they're it's a little scary as they're starting to round into form. All right, next up, we're going to put a bow on the preview for this game, take a quick peek ahead at the schedule. And again, we just kind of have to, on a daily basis, monitor what the chatter is regarding the trade market and the potential for the Wolves to get involved in something major. So we'll do that next. Before we get to that, I did want to mention Spotify Wrapped. If you're a Spotify listener and use Spotify Wrapped to show us your top Locked On podcast for the year, take a screenshot and tag us on Twitter at Locked On Live and at Locked On T-Wolves on Twitter, and we'll share and retweet. That's at Locked On Live and at Locked On T-Wolves. Share your screenshot with us on Twitter, and we will share and retweet your screenshot. Okay, so to summarize keys to the game for this one, the Timberwolves need to rebound the ball on the defensive end of the floor, especially. The Clippers are the best offensive rebounding team in the league. The Wolves also need to, and you could say this almost any night, but especially against a team that is such a, they, in terms of attempts, the Clippers are pretty middle of the pack in the league, but they're one of the better three-point shooting teams from top to bottom. So the Wolves need to do a good job of contesting three-point attempts in this one. And also getting Karl-Anthony Towns the ball in advantageous places to score. Harrell's a really good defender. He's undersized, however. So it'll be interesting to see how the Clippers choose to attack Towns on when the Wolves are on offense. And if they're committing two to him, they don't need to with how good their defenders are overall. But what that strategy is going to be and what shooters they're going to choose to leave open, if any, I'll be really interested to see that. But the Wolves need to get Towns in advantageous places to score. The perimeter players are going to have a tough time scoring and creating in this game. Without Patrick Beverley, Jeff Teague has a chance to have another big game. It's not like Lou Williams is much to write home about as a defender, and any other Beverley replacements aren't going to wow on either end of the floor. That's where the Clippers have some depth issues. On the wing and in the front court, though, they're extremely deep and should be able to just keep running guys out there to go up against Towns and to make like life miserable for the Wolves in the paint. So if the Wolves can do all those things, they should be able to hang in this game. Again, front end of a back-to-back for the Clippers, fifth game on a six-game road trip, I think. There's definitely a chance for letdown after the Kawhi return to Toronto on Wednesday. So if the Wolves can hang around in this one, they'll have a shot down the stretch can definitely be competitive with Towns and Wiggins and Teague if those guys all play up to their potential in this game. All right, looking ahead, the Wolves then have the next 4 days off before taking on the Pelicans next Wednesday, and Sunday is December 15th, which means that all players acquired in the offseason league-wide are able to be moved. So that's a big day. I don't think anything happens quickly, really, for anybody. It's typically the case unless there's some no-brainer moves out there, but none of the big stuff tends to happen until a lot closer to the deadline. But that just means we're hearing more and more about potential trades and what teams are looking to make moves. The Timberwolves, of course, are still going to be mentioned in the D'Angelo Russell, or as a suitor for D'Angelo Russell. There's a great article, if you have a subscription to The Athletic, out by Anthony Slater, who covers the Warriors for The Athletic, about D'Angelo Russell's past, his revival with the Nets, and then going to Golden State. There's quite a bit of Timberwolves-related items in there. Of course, the Wolves offered him an over $100 million contract this offseason. The one revelation related to the Wolves in here, well, actually, I think there's two. One is that D'Angelo Russell had apparently verbally agreed to the deal with the Warriors just before he went on the infamous helicopter ride with many Timberwolves key players, from Ryan Saunders, Gerson Rosas, Karl-Anthony Towns, Pablo Prigioni, who was good friends with Russell from their time together in Brooklyn. And then apparently Glenn Taylor as well. Helicopter ride over Los Angeles, private location, big presentation. And apparently the story that Russell had verbally agreed to the sign and trade to go from the Nets to the Warriors broke while they were returning on the helicopter ride, which led to a really awkward goodbye. And apparently Russell, and he should, but apparently he feels bad about it. When it was brought up in the interview, he basically was like, oh man, you know, I don't want to act like I, you know, meant to do this wrong. I meant to, you know, type of a thing. And obviously him and Towns are still really good friends. So you know, you feel a little bit bad for Russell, but clearly it's not a good look. And so that is a little embarrassing for the Wolves that that all broke out. But the other thing that's interesting is that Russell actually let, there's a slip of a tongue somewhere in this interview with Slater for The Athletic, where Russell basically says, yeah, you know, I knew I'd come to the Warriors and have a year and learn from the guys here. And then who knows? And then he kind of tries to cover it and says, oh, well, you know, hopefully I'm here for the whole contract. Remember, he signed a 4-year deal. And in my opinion, what the Warriors are trying to do is they knew they didn't have Klay Thompson, obviously weren't going to have Kevin Durant. So they were going to try and win as many games as they could with Steph Curry and D'Angelo Russell, and then have the ability to flip Russell at the end of the season when Thompson was going to come back. They don't need those three guys together. I don't know that that fit is very good. And they know that there's going to be plenty of teams like the Wolves, potentially like, I mean, maybe the Lakers, but there's going to be, although that's unlikely to happen within the Western Conference, there's going to be plenty of teams out there that are going to, that would be interested in a ball dominant point guard who can score as a probably a second option on a hopeful playoff team. So I think that's probably still the Warriors' plan with Curry being out for so much of this season. I think it may have affected it. Maybe he's not moved at the deadline, or maybe he is now that the February deadline, now that they know that Curry won't, you know, this isn't a playoff team. Clearly they're the worst team in the Western Conference right now. So it'll be interesting to see what goes down related to that moving forward. But let's just say, I mean, let's be very clear. The rumors are not going anywhere. There remains a strong possibility that Russell's traded at some point, whether it's the deadline or this summer, and the Wolves are going to be the clear number one suitor, at least according to the NBA, I don't know, blogosphere and podcast sphere, if you will. So that's something we're not going to stop hearing about. Don't expect anything to happen anytime soon, but that's the most recent update on that scenario. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. We'll be back Monday morning with a recap of the weekend, any news that breaks related to the Sunday, December 15th key date, as well as a quick recap on Friday's game against the Clippers that hopefully finds the Wolves being competitive and potentially even pulling out a win against one of the best teams in the league. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.